Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
You ever negotiated with the Japanese before?
Well, this is hardly a negotiation.
What is it?
Homicide.
Every aspect of your appearance and behavior will reflect on me as your senpai.
My senpai? That wouldn't happen to be anything like Massa, now would it?
From the number one bestseller.
Whatever happens, don't lose your temper.
I don't lose my temper.
That's good to know.
A Philip Kaufman film.
You should know I'm a black belt. But of course you are, Dale.
Sean Connery.
We're playing that most American of games.
Which is what?
Catch up.
Wesley Snipes.
Hey look, senpai, apple pie, whatever it is you want me to call you. We have a murder here and I want to solve it. I don't want to hear true confessions.
You know what's true? When something looks too good to be true, then it's not true.
Business is war. So where does that leave us?
Us? We're in the war zone.
Hello and welcome to Smirchpod Royale, a podcast celebrating all the Bond films and Bond-related films by those who enjoy, hate and, you know, just aren't asked about them. Hosted by me, John Rain. This week we'll be heading into the exciting world of international diplomacy and discover just how you approach an international diplomatic relation when you're a bit of a weirdo. Yes, it's Rising Sun, and joining me is my own personal international liaison officer who is skilled in diplomacy and will be teaching us just what you should and shouldn't do when dealing with a Welsh.
Oh God, I knew that's how it was going as well, but I wasn't prepared for the ending. Hello, yep. Everyone.
Hello. Yes, it's comedy senpai, Dan Thomas-san.
Oh, that's the last one of those you get. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah.
Because also, every time Karate Kid was on when I was a kid, I would be Daniel-san for the next month and a half.
Oh, sorry.
And I don't know if you remember, but Karate Kid was on every month and a half on ITV when we were kids.
I remember I used to wax off to it all the time. Elizabeth Shue was in it. So Rising Sun.
Yeah. I remember being quite enthusiastic about choosing this one.
Yeah, you couldn't believe that I hadn't done it. And I couldn't believe you couldn't believe I hadn't done it.
Well, I thought this is one of those ones, isn't it?
Huh.
And I just, it's sort of one of his more remembered ones, but it's kind of, people remember that he's in it, but it's not one that anyone has revisited in 25 years, really. Because it became dated almost instantaneously. The threat that the Japanese were taking over the world vanished, I think, opening weekend.
Yeah.
And so it's not, it's one of his more dated films.
But, you know, this is a good year for Michael Crichton, because this and Jurassic Park, and obviously all these years later, people are still talking about Rising Sun, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was, because I, in preparation for this, I thought, because I used to read quite a lot of Michael Crichton when I was, younger, and this is one of the ones I never read, so I picked it up. Knowing we were going to do this, and I read it. But on the front, it says Rising Sun from the blockbuster author of Jurassic Park. So Jurassic Park is not a selling point for this whatsoever.
No. Well, it's got something in common, though. There's some dinosaurs in it, terms of the technology.
And in terms of some of the social attitudes.
Yeah, oh God, yeah. Actually, it's got a lot in terms of in common about Jurassic Park, but I'll get to that later. Well, what I enjoyed about this is that the first credit you got up on the screen, it says Walrus and Associates.
Yeah, I wonder what they've done since.
I just thought, is that a dig at Connery?
wouldn't be the name of his company, is it?
Oh, I don't know. It might be.
I don't know.
He wouldn't pick something that he can't say. Walrus. What are you called? I've got a meeting at 3 o'clock with Michael Crichton. What's the name of your company? Walrus. What?
Walrus. Like a what?
Woolworths?
You know what? I'm changing it to golf. I like golfy.
The first thing you see is like a Wild West scene, and a dog comes running out of a stable with a human hand in its mouth.
Yeah, this is an interesting choice.
I thought, I've seen this film once, probably in 1993.
Right. Yeah.
And I thought, I don't remember it being a Western with a dog with a hand in its mouth.
No, this is a very interesting opening.
Hmm.
It's the last interesting thing that will happen for a while.
Yeah.
Because they've gone, I think what they've done, there's a bunch of stuff. I mean, straight away, it doesn't make sense.
No.
So he's gone with an intro, and I guess what they're going for the theme of the film is the concern, because it looks like a Western. It looks like a 70s Western, but everyone in it is a Japanese actor.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be, look, they're even taking over our Westerns now.
Mm.
Like, and it's like, okay, well, that sort of sets up the theme, and I suppose. And then it pans out from it. It turns out it's just the back-end video for a karaoke tip.
Yeah. You have Kari Hiroyuku Tagawa.
Yeah.
Who was in License to Kill. So this is a double Smash Pod episode.
That's right, yeah.
He's doing karaoke to Don't Fence Me In.
Which I've had in my head for a week since I watched this film. Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah. He's having a jolly old time in a karaoke bar. Karaoke, of course, means sing on your own.
Isn't it silent orchestra or something like that, or invisible orchestra or something like that?
And it's also the name of the Blue Peter Cats.
I don't know if that's true.
It's true. They're Carrie and Oki, Blue Peter Cats.
That is, that's shit, isn't it?
Mm, they were framed for doing the Blue Peter Garden, and they were executed by the Queen.
What the hell are you talking about?
I don't know. Okay. So
sometimes you'll tell me this stuff, because there's no differentiation between you lying and you telling the truth, because sometimes I go, that sounds like bollocks, and he goes, no, that's true. It's like, well, I give up then. One day we're going to play cards, and I'm going to not know what to do. I'm either going to win big, or I'll just die penniless.
Well, you're going to win big, because I don't know how to play cards, so...
Yeah, but that you might be lying. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, true. Yeah. Yeah, so he's doing his karaoke, and his girlfriend, Carrie... Is it Carrie? Sorry, his girlfriend, Cheryl.
Cheryl Lee Cole. No, no, not Cheryl Lee Cole. Cheryl Lee Lynn Austin, that's it.
Yeah,
Cheryl Lynn Austin, yes. Yeah.
She's not impressed.
No.
And she gets so angry, she becomes badly dubbed.
Yeah, everyone gets, at some point, everyone gets that angry in this film.
Because she, it turns out, is a German model. And she's looking good.
In real life, she's a German model.
And she's looking good. Sorry, yeah, but every time she speaks, she's like, well, I declare.
Yeah, it was Lindsey Graham actually dubbed her.
Yeah.
A little, check out his IMDb, it's his one credit.
He even does all the sex scenes.
Yeah, he just puts on a wig.
Yeah.
The Rising Sun is what Trump has been holding against Lindsey Graham, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's been blackmailing him with.
Lindsay, I didn't like you in Rising Sun, but you had an amazing pair of titties.
Yeah. People aren't going to like that you were 32% on Rotten Tomatoes, Lindsay. 32%. Look up what I got Home Alone to. Mm-hmm. 78. Okay?
You looked that up, didn't you?
No, I'm guessing.
Are you guessing? All right, okay. Again, yeah. I'm not playing cards with you. she storms out. Are you still looking up now?
Okay. I might as well. I'm just going to quick IMDb, Rotten Tomatoes. I just want to see how close I got, because this is fun for everyone.
Can I just say I respect you for saying Rotten Tomatoes?
Why? What do people usually say?
Well, you'd say, people often say tomatoes.
No, they can fuck up.
Like they're Americans.
Oh, I got news for Lindsey Graham. Home Alone 2, only 34 against Rising Sun's 32. So
1%, Lindsay, that's the difference 1%. Between losers. but she storms out, and then Eddie, his name is, He comes out and says, "Don't ever do that to me again. I hate it when you do that." And then they get in his super sports car and drive off.
Yeah. And then the camera pans up to, well, first of all, we get a time code that says 6:34 a.m.
Yeah.
Despite the fact the sun is clearly straight above them, from you can tell from the shadows. Doesn't matter.
No.
And then we pan up to the, what is the name of the company in this?
Well, it's the company they want to buy is Microcon.
Yeah. But the corporation is Nakamura. Nakamura?
I think is it Nakamura?
Nakamura, something like that. I think they changed it from the book. So
Nakamoto.
Nakamoto. Okay, it is. Okay. So, and this is the thing in this film, is every single window in this film seems to be facing this one corporate headquarters.
Yes.
So they're having a karaoke at 6:30 in the morning, which I guess that could happen. But then it pans up to the building, and then we cut into the building. They're having a meeting at 6:34 in the morning.
Maybe Eddie's like Alan Partridge. Like, you know, Partridge could get a branch of Maplin's. Or was it Tandy? It was Tandy.
Good action, good action.
Yeah, he can get Tandy open early in the morning. Maybe Eddie can get a karaoke bar open at 6 in the morning.
Well, I'll just keep him there. He looks like he's a big spender, I can imagine that still being open. I know, I've been in a bar at 6:30. I mean, I haven't been in O'Reilly's pool hall. It's not quite the same thing. But still, you could stay up. But what the part I have a problem with is the fact that there's a meeting happening at 6:30 in the morning.
That's true. And also, I've heard Larry Miller's 12 Stages of Drinking, and number 12 is doing karaoke at 6:30 in the morning.
The devil in your shoulder is cutting a deal with the Japanese.
We'll have to email Larry about that. He'd probably do it now. The fucker will do anything.
That's a great reference. Well, not enough people have seen that clip. If you get a chance, everyone go check out Larry Miller's Stages of Drinking.
It is an incredible routine.
It's the best piece of stand-up I've ever seen.
I got it on I think it was NME or no, it was Select. Select did a tape of the best stand-up routines. And this was about 1992.
Wow.
And Larry Miller's was on there. And it is incredible.
Oh, that's not, because the only thing I've ever seen is a really bad VHS that's on YouTube.
Well, Select had it on a tape. So if anyone, if anyone's got it, upload it and share it, because it's
great.
Wonderful. There are 12 Stages of Drinking. That was bad. I sounded like Shatner. They're having
William Shatner's fucking 12 Stages of Drinking. That would be an amazing bit of stand-up.
The 12th stage, of course, being your wife being in the pool.
I love that. That was a perfectly timed sip then. Good. Oh, bit of trouble from the crowd. Yeah. Take a drink and move on.
So anyway, I've been thinking socks. No. So during the next day, as you say, the following minute, there's a board meeting going on between Microcon and Nakamoto. Now, there's a stumbling block here that Ray Wise is in this. Is Senator John Morton. He's against the deal. He's going to vote against it, and he's got political leverage. So the Japanese have got this. Now we have to refer to them as the Japanese in this, because this film treats them like they're raptors.
Oh, it's like they're an. Do you know what? I tell you what it reminded me of, the way they talk about the Japanese, the way that they talk about the aliens in the film Alien Nation.
Yes, you're right.
They're completely inhuman, and they talk about them like a completely alien species. It's bizarre.
Yeah. It's like Connery's been to the planet from Alien Nation, and now is the only person who knows how they tick.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to get into that. the Japanese are spying on the Americans with secret cameras, and a man is telling the Japanese in their ear what the Americans are whispering to one another.
Yeah, despite the fact that the Americans are 3 feet away on the other side of the table and probably more audible than they are through a Hitachi speakers, right? It's nothing important. Mm-mm. It's just like, we're not sure we want to do the deal yet. Which, by the way, I'm going to need you to explain why, because, like I say, I've read the book and I still don't understand this particular element of it.
Why they don't want to do the deal.
Yeah, why are they even there to sell their company if they don't want to do the deal?
Well, they do. I think they do want to sell it. I think it's that there's this, as you said earlier, there's a slight bit of racism. They don't want Japanese companies to take over American ones.
Yeah, but why don't they just, why if Nakamoto comes to them and says, we want to buy a company, then why don't they go, nah.
I think these...
Because it cuts to the bit where Ray Wise, the senator, is on the news, and he says, I'm going to vote against allowing the deal. And they high-five each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, then why are you even there then?
But these two Microcon lads, though, they're slightly conflicted, aren't they? Because these the Japanese are giving them nice dinners and prostitutes everywhere they go.
Yeah. Well, not everywhere they go.
Well, everywhere we see them, pretty much.
I was in a shoe shop the other day, and they sent a prostitute to the shoe shop. I'm just here for a couple of plusfours. He's like, I just want shoes. No, they're not everywhere. Also, these two, their wives are there as well. But they are showing them a good time. But they don't seem like they want to be there, and they don't trust the Japanese corporation.
But they're fairly meek, aren't they?
Well, like all computer people are in films from the 90s. Mm, yeah. Or hackers.
Yeah. Well, they're not hackers because they're not cool. Mm. They haven't got like a baseball cap on sideways. Or one of those caps with the spinning propeller on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They're just dweebs.
Yeah.
They're like a meme if you looked up old computer man.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, they're kind of against it. So then we get Eddie watching the senator, as you mentioned, Ray Wise, is on TV saying, I'm not backing that deal. I'm an American. And Eddie, direct from his karaoke visit, is now in his room with his German Texan girlfriend. And she's sitting there.
German Texan girl who's in the first bit of nuttiness.
Completely Billy Boggs. You can see everything.
You can't. You can just see her lower buttocks, buttocks. You can't even see the whole buttocks.
You can see her booby doobies.
You can see one of them at a time, but it's only the same.
Mm. He doesn't mind, though.
No.
No. He comes out the bathroom, he looks at the TV, and he just goes, ha, 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 ha. So something's afoot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then we cut to... is this where Wesley Snipes... Oh, no, sorry. We go straight to the commencement gala.
Yeah.
At the newly opened Los Angeles headquarters of Nakamoto, a Japanese business network. And then we see Cheryl Lynn... being led into the boardroom by someone, we don't know who, and is sexed right up. He goes right down her trousers with his head.
Oh God, I'd love if you were a police witness. I saw the whole thing.
He went right down her trousers with his head.
Right, okay. Did you see, like, a physical description? Well, I assume he had a tongue.
I could only see the back of his head, but it was...
Only the back of his head.
It was a blur.
Yeah. He was... Oh, God, no.
Yeah, she was whinnying.
She was whinnying?
Yeah. No, she's enjoying herself, and then he reaches up and he grabs her by the throat. But she's kind of into it.
Yeah, yeah.
And we carry on like that, and then I don't think we actually see her die immediately, do we?
No. Well, no. I think he's got the old hands on the old throat there, and then it cuts to Wesley Snipes answering the phone
in his bed.
In his bed, and then he picks up like Wesley Snipes throat murders, and luckily it's the right number. Otherwise, that's a weird thing.
He's called Webb.
He's called Webb Smith. Which is, they changed it from the book because they've got the two heroes have the most boring names in the book. It's John Connor, which sounds a lot like Sean Connery. Yeah. And then there was Peter Smith, which is the most boring name for a hero ever.
Also, the Terminator came back from the future to stop Japanese relations.
Yeah.
Because that's what kills Skynet in the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sad. What if it's this John, elderly John Connor comes back? He goes, you know what? Robots aren't so bad. It's the Japanese who are the problem. Mate, just because you got old, I mean, you got to get racist. I'm not being racist. I've seen the future and they're a problem.
Luckily, I'm able to keep them at bay by playing golf with them once a day.
The trick is basically golf with them and sudden arm movements. They don't like it. Trust me, okay? And
remember, let them win.
What about the robots? Don't worry about the... At least the robots aren't eating fucked up fish. All right, mate, you're just offensive and old now.
No, it's not me, it's everybody else.
Oh, yeah. I've lived with these, you know, people. Mm. Why did you do quote marks around people, Sean? That's offensive. That is offensive.
Their cooking's fine. I'm not a fan of sushi, but I'll eat it.
They don't really use cheese in their cooking, and I quite like cheese.
Could you stop saying they? It's really offensive.
Oh, all right. The Japanese.
You've done the speech marks again.
Okay. Which was in the wrong place.
So Wesley Snipes. And I must say, at this point, this film made me just go, I really miss Wesley Snipes.
Yeah.
He was really spoken good.
He was really good. Mm. And he's we don't find out till the end, he's a really good martial artist, apparently.
Yeah, he does it in a lot of his films. Passenger 57, right. He does it. Demolition Man, he does it. I read him up on Wikipedia today. He's been doing all these kung fu and special karate since he was 12.
Yeah.
So he knows his stuff.
Nobody messed with him in prison.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, that was the bit I'd kind of buried that, I think, because I was reading his Wikipedia and went, oh, yeah, he went to prison for 3 years.
I was talking to my sister about this yesterday, and she had never internalised the fact that Wesley Snipes went to prison. It just didn't go in. But he was fairly well publicised.
He's having a comeback now, though, isn't he?
Is he? What's he doing?
Well, he did Dolomite Is My Name, and he was very good in that.
Oh, that's right. He was excellent in that, yeah.
Yeah, and he's going to be in Coming to America 2.
The sequel no one really asked for.
No, not even Eddie Murphy.
No.
But, you know, needs must when Amazon throw money at you.
It's an S-Pod thing. The podcast revisiting S Club 7's insane TV show.
Yeah, I can't imagine anyone's binge-watched this. Anyone who's not on drugs.
Thank you for bringing this into my life. It was honestly truly appalling.
Guests helped me analyse the show in more detail than anyone ever asked for.
It feels weird to me to say the phrase sex object in a show that was aimed at six-year-olds.
Do you think there's one of the problems with this show is that 7 is too much?
It's an S-Pod thing from Great Big Owl.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So he's woken up and he's like a kind of liaison officer, isn't he, for Japanese people?
I think it's specifically, so he's the special, whatever he is, yeah, liaison guy for all Japanese-related cases.
Yeah, and we've also got this weird framing device, which isn't a bookend, really. It's more like a sort of wonky shelf that collapses halfway through, where he's being interrogated, like, what were your movements that night? Why were you called? Who called you? And he's like, oh, Harvey Keitel called me. And he was told to go to the scene. And on the way to the scene, he gets a call in his car. And in his car, he's learning Japanese. He's not turning Japanese, if anyone thinks so. He's not wanking. He's learning Japanese. So he'd be like, arigato, Wesley Snipes.
I love that. Like, yeah. I assume this isn't his first lesson, considering he's been on the job for in the job for 6 months. Mm. He's 6 months in. I'm up to arigato, which I thought was an Italian coffee.
But... Yeah, I did. It's good to have a refresher, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he gets a call while he's in his car saying, you have to go and pick someone up from this address.
Yeah.
And he has to pick up someone called John Connor, a former police captain, an expert on Japanese affairs. So he goes.
Well, he is a police captain, but he is currently on long-term leave for reasons we don't ever find out.
Ever. No, there's a mention later on that he was a Japanese basher, whatever that means.
Yeah, I don't even know what that means.
No. No. Unless it's a wanking reference. I don't know. He got caught wanking.
I used to work in Japan doing quite a lot of work. What sort of thing? I was just wanking lads off.
Mainly on the chauffeur.
Yeah. Sort of the middle. I mean, they were sort of halfway up each and every one of them.
Well, they're a bit smaller than me, obviously. Yeah, so he picks him up and he goes into his apartment. But first of all, he has to ask a man who's murdering seals.
Oh, God. So Sean Connery lives above the world's least hygienic butchers.
Mm. I mean, the view is awful. Sorry.
Oh, and it's one of those things where they try to make it look cool because it's just a butcher's that works only at night and is lit by neon light. Because this is the only bit that they went, shall we make the whole thing look Blade Runner-y? No, just these fish. And then they move on.
And it's a bit, it reminded me a bit, when he walks in and sees the guy putting a hatchet into a seal's head, it made me think of that bit in The Simpsons where Mo gets that call from Lisa saying, I know what you're doing, cut it out. And he goes into his back room and releases that killer whale. Like, we've got a room full of seals here and a policeman's here. Just style it out. Just put a hatchet in. But he has to go upstairs. And when he walks into Connery's room, Connery's sort of on his knees doing something. And then he says, you're late.
I assume that's supposed to be a little Shinto thing that he's doing. He's just having a little Shinto in the living room.
I hope he flushed it.
Yeah.
But he says this weird line. We should talk about this in a moment, but he says, you're late. And Snipes says, I just got the call. What do you want? And then he goes, you're late beyond time.
Yeah.
What the fuck are you talking about?
So don't be sorry, beyond time.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
Because this is directed by Philip Kaufman.
The talented Philip Kaufman.
Yeah, who did the very spacey Invasion of the Body Snatchers remake. Among other things. And this is a spacey film. I don't mean Kevin's in it. I mean, it's a bit out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of... But not because of the material.
No, because of the
style choices. Because it is actually a very conventional thriller.
Very. But it's got little touches in it that just make it a bit weird and sort of almost Lynchian, but except David Lynch's stuff has a bit more flight of fantasy about it.
You feel like there's planning behind Lynch for it. It's going to be weird because it's meant to be that way rather than this is like, let's see what happens if we do some fucking weird stuff. Even the first five minutes is odd because it's a lot of... we find out about Microcon and Eddie and all that stuff. We don't need to know that. That's stuff we should find out with the detectives.
Yes.
And as it is, it just goes, oh, what an interesting twist at the start that it's dull as fuck.
You didn't see that coming, did you?
It's like the thing, no film should have... Because the first thing that happens is when they're in the boardroom is that they catch... the McLaughlin group, which used to be in everything? It was just a bunch of... It was a real show on a Sunday morning of politics people talking. Right? And we remember we did Dave a while back. They were in that as well.
Yeah.
But they shouldn't... It's just the three most boring people in the world talking. And in this, their guest is the senator who will be important later. But it's not an exciting way to start. Imagine if you were watching a British film from the 90s and 2 minutes in, fucking Brian Walden turns up. You're not going to be like, oh, this is going to be a white knuckle ride. Oh, what's Brian got to say?
Mr. Connery, I'd like to know why your windscreen wrappers sound like a lady being strangled.
What do yours fucking sound like?
A normal windscreen wipers, actually. Yeah, because when they get in the car with Snipes, it's all a bit weird and spaced out. And then every time the windscreen wipers go back and forth, windscreen wipers even, you get this kind of...
Yeah, I mean, it actually is that, isn't it? They've had a... The sound effects guys went, yeah, we're... imagine telling your wife on the way back from work. Yeah, I was doing sound effects today. And who could I hear in the background when I called you at lunchtime? Oh, nothing. I was just doing... we were doing the sound effects for windscreen wipers. Don't lie to me. That was Brenda again, wasn't it?
I had to get the sound.
I had to get the sound. She's the only woman I know who's... she's the only woman I know who sounds like windscreen wipers. When we first met, you were my windscreen wipers, but you changed. Lorraine.
Now you only do the back window.
I've asked you to the back window and you won't.
Even though you love me, supposedly.
Not even on my birthday do you let me do the back window.
So I've got to go to someone else on my back window. And she's filthy.
The point is, I was working.
Didn't sound like you were working. So they arrive at the Nakamoto headquarters and immediately we meet Harvey Keitel.
Oh, we just missed the one bit where
Oh, God, yes, sorry.
Smith, He says, so when were you called? And he says, well, I was called 10 minutes ago, and I was called 5 minutes ago in the car. And Sean Connery, he does this all the way through. He says, you're called twice. I wish I'd known that. We better, just calm down, you fucking tart. Just like, he's had two phone calls. It's a busy night. Stop acting like everything's the end of the bleeding world. And at first, it's probably until halfway through the film, I'm like, oh, this guy knows something. He's got a wisdom to him. He understands the He hasn't. He's just a whinging bitch.
I like the way he's that awful stereotype as well. Like, take your shoes off, because I like Japanese things.
Actually, he does nail that line. He doesn't say take your shoes off. He just does a thing like, in fact, you know what? He goes, shoes. And you can't see what I'm doing, but he's got a plaintive quality to it.
Yeah.
Of just like, it's like, you know what? I've just realised, Sean Connery in this, this is a thriller about American-Japanese relations, and he's playing it like Hyacinth Bouquet, right? The whole way through. Oh, shoes, doily! Calm down, Sean. What the fuck's wrong with you?
I've just shaken fact. And then he reaches for his shoes when they're about to leave, and there's a pair of stilettos next to them.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that's revealed why later.
Oh, but, which is interesting, because in the book, the stilettos are there, but the reveal that happens on the film is not in the book. It's for no reason.
Oh, I thought I thought it was because of Tia Carrere.
Yeah, but that subplot, whatever you want to call it, that relationship doesn't happen in the book. That was invented for the film.
Oh.
But it still sets up that there's a lady Sue's there.
Because I was thinking maybe he was going to put them on and go, I look fucking fabulous.
Do you know what? Do these go with my entirely black outfit?
Oh, God, he looks so awful. He looks exactly like, in this, the Saturday Night Live Jeopardy Sean Connery.
Yeah.
And sometimes I see him and think he's going to say, that's what your mother said last night, Rebecca. It's ridiculous. He's got a black polo neck and a black suit.
Yeah. Where Armani, though, I mean, it looks fine. The wig's bad. I'm going to say,
really bad.
He was pretty good at wigs, and this one is a little bit like, I'll just shove it on.
La titch now. It's really bad, and you can see the join.
Because also, for some reason, he's let his hair. This movie takes place over about 72 hours, and his hair, his actual real hair, grows clearly until he's got a little bit of a rat's tail by a couple of scenes towards the end.
He's also got a little bit in his beard at the bottom that looks like he's been twisting it between his fingers to give it a little point.
Well, that I'm going to level with you. I'm glad you brought this up now. I'll be honest. I used to try and do that beard.
Really?
He's trying to make it into a point, but all he's actually done is not shave the rectangle bit at the front.
So he's thinking, haha, I'm really the devil.
Yeah, and I used to try and do that, and I never mastered it. And actually, looking back at this film, neither does he, because it looks shit some of the time.
It does. So you're not the senpai, you're the, what's the?
Kohai.
I was going to say poopai. That's not right, is it? So they meet Harvey Keitel, who's a racist.
Yeah. I mean, and I'll be honest with you, the character in the book, it does sound like, because he's got so much dialogue in the book, it feels like, is this just Michael Crichton getting stuff off his chest?
I was going to say, this feels like that.
Yeah.
Because he's like talking about how the Japanese are awful and they shouldn't, if they're in America, they should speak American.
Yeah. We're still the cops in our own fucking country, you know?
He's also got a bad sort of blonde rinse.
I was looking to see if that was a wig as well. I think it might be.
Yeah, that's true. He doesn't look good in this.
I think maybe he read the script and went, I'm going to try and disguise myself as much as possible.
Yeah.
Well, I'm afraid you're Harvey Keitel and you've got the most defined face in cinema history.
I'd like you to give me the face of a Yorkie dog so no one knows it's me. And I'll be wearing sunglasses so I look like Jeff Lynn. So they get in the lift. There's a bit of racism. Even when the lift talks in Japanese, because it's a Japanese company, he takes issue with that. What did that goddamn lift say? It said we're going to the 45th floor. It should tell us that in American, damn it.
Yeah, that's the vibe.
Yeah. So then they're sent to act. The reason they're there is to send to act as a liaison with the Japanese executives. And when they get there, we see there's a dead lady from earlier on. Is on the boardroom table.
Yeah.
And the liaison from Nakamoto just says, gentlemen, you know, why are you here? It's clearly a drug overdose.
This bloke is really good.
Yeah.
He plays it really well. So his name's Ishihara, and he is supposed to be, like, the special counsel for the Nakamoto. How many times am I going to say Nakatomi, thinking it's Diode?
I keep thinking Nakamoto. Yakimoto. Yeah, sorry, Nakamoto, yeah.
There's a few things. We see a few things here that is sort of important later.
Yeah.
So we see a guy, Tanaka, who is the head of security that we saw earlier, who did the one joke, which I forgot. This movie starts with a joke.
Oh, yeah. What's the joke?
So they're listening. This one security guy is listening in on the boardroom when they're having the meeting with the Microcon guys, and he's recounting everything like, oh, I'm not sure if we should do the deal. Yeah, let's just wait till after the thing. And he says, this guy's a real asshole. And then it's the Japanese guy going, this guy's a real asshole. It's like, ha, ha, ha. But that guy is back in this, and he's walking around the crime scene taking loads of pictures.
Yeah, we don't know why.
Yeah, Ishihara says something like, oh, there's going to be, we have to do our own internal investigation or something.
So then, on the way there, by the way, Connery says to Wesley Snipes, remember, don't lose your temper. And if you get into trouble, and he says, I'm not going to get into trouble. He goes, well, if you do, if I say, perhaps I can be of some assistance, stand back and let me take charge. I will be the senpai.
Oh, that's right. And you will be the kohai.
He goes, is that a racist thing?
Yeah, he says, is that anything like master? Mm. Which is like, you two are being very dramatic.
Mm.
But this is the scene where Sean Connery says, the Japanese find big arm movements threatening.
Mm.
And
their vision's based on movement.
Their vision's based on movement. We you know, there weren't any Japanese till a few years ago. We found blood from one on a rock.
Here's John, whatever the fuck his name is, to give us Mr. DNA about the Japanese.
Hey, the Japanese don't like sudden arm movements. All right, just cut that out. But this is where he's got the we may, oh God, I mean, this is so made for the, we may come from a fragmented MTV rap video culture, but they do not.
You fucking don't.
You don't. When were you last listening to MTV rap? I fucking love it. You're on VH1 if you're lucky.
You're listening to Radio 4.
Yeah, exactly. You somehow, yeah, you are. You would be excited if fucking, you know, you got to listen to Brian Walden, you boring old sods, right?
The reason those stilettos are there is because you knew Wesley was coming around and you swapped out your old tartan slippers for them.
Oh, exactly. This will make me seem kinky.
Yeah, that line killed me. We may be from the fragmented empty. What are you talking about? You're about 60 years old.
We may come from the fragmented Dumont Network video culture, but they do not. Dumont Network, what's wrong with you?
We may come from the Colgate Comedy Hour. What? Yeah, so he tells them all that. So when they get into the corporate environment, the guy's saying, oh, it's probably a drug overdose. He pisses off Harvey Keitel, who's a racist. And then it all gets a bit hairy. And then Connery steps forward and says, maybe I could be of some assistance.
And the next 30 seconds is everything I really did remember about this film.
Mm-hmm.
This is the cool bit.
He shouts at the Japanese guy. Yeah.
I know. Now, that makes me sound bad. But also, but he does nail it.
Yeah. He says, you know, we can deal with this diplomatically or whatever. And then he says, all I need is the name of all the guests. And he's like, what? And then he says, I want the name of the guest and don't fuck with me.
Yeah, he goes into full Japanese talking, Japanese language, I suppose you call it.
Yeah, I suppose you could, yeah.
You could call it that. Yeah. And then he goes, and don't you fuck with it. And he nails it, right? Mm. But actually, it's one of my favorite bits of Sean Connery acted, right? He's after he says, don't you fuck with me. And the guy leaves, but the camera stays on Sean Connery. And Sean Connery does the slightest little gesture with his eyes, which means, I think that went quite well, actually.
Mm.
And it's actually, because you wouldn't even find out later, the reason he's done it is because he has to, if he shouts down that Ishihara guy, then Ishihara will owe him a favour, because then he will have had to help the investigation, and in front of his bosses, the other Nakamoto guys, Sean Connery's playing a game, he's basically helped the guy out.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that's quite clever. For about 3 or 4 minutes, this is a clever film.
Yeah, he says he did it so his superior would not lose face, and now he owes him a favour.
Yeah.
And then he just walks into the boardroom, they look at the body, and Connery just walks over to a wall, pushes it, and it opens, and Wesley Snipes says, oh, the executive fuck chamber. And it's a bedroom.
Yeah. It is quite satiny, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I think those places are essentially for if you've got a visiting executive and you can't be asked to give them a hotel.
Mm.
But this does look like a fuck chamber.
It really does.
It looks like Betty Boop lives in there.
Looks like Cynthia Payne lives. It's like a proper knocking shop.
I love it. Because the thing is, you have these references in your head. It takes me a second, but I really enjoy them when I remember who Cynthia Payne was.
So then this forensic officer comes in and says, she was fucked to death.
Oh, shit. That's a woman who loves her job. Mm. She has got a great... She's absolutely... Looks like she's a gasper. Watch a gasper. Well, she you can see her like she's... Oh, she loves... Oh, God, they're grabbing by the throat. Oh, she loves it. And then... Oh, and then basically... Oh, and then it's the hypoxia that gets him off. Mm. I don't know why I've made her go Welsh, but...
No, I like it, because it would be better if she says, in a Welsh accent, she might have just popped off during sex.
That's right. Sometimes they just pop off during sex, and then she tells a story about some...
Bloke who got hit with a baseball.
Bloke got hit in the chest, not even hard in the baseball, and then dropped down dead. That's not the same as being strangled to death while being fucked.
No, unless he was being bummed at the time, of course.
Because, yeah. It was union rules, not league, see? Yeah. So that's what it was.
He was a teamster. Yeah, and then Keitel just loudly proclaims, they're all perverts.
That's right. He says, yeah. These guys are well-known perversion freaks. Are they?
Are they really? I mean, I know they buy pants out of vending machines, but... that's me generalising again there.
Well, I mean, some of them do. But you know what? Because I remember the first time I heard that, and the first thing I thought was, I think that would work in this country as well.
Mm. Oh, God, yeah.
We just haven't done it yet.
They're just more upfront about it, that's all.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're the ones that are wanking off to their cartoons.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't mean me personally.
No, or me personally, but I've heard about people doing it, and we've probably got ourselves into a bit of a cul-de-sac here. Shall we move on?
I mean, Spirited Away is a really tough wank, let's be honest. Moving Castle, though. Horn festive, that is.
Oh, God.
So then, during the initial investigation, the security man, who's just like the weirdest, horniest man in the world.
I'm going to call this as he gives the worst performance in the entire film.
He is dreadful.
And I've seen him out of the stuff, and he's not a bad actor. I think he's been given bad direction.
Yeah. Well, from the look of it, I think Philip Kaufman is just on acid when he made this film.
I'd like to think so.
Because he's like, I can't tell you anything, gentlemen. Oh, keep looking up at the camera. Oh,
he looks like he has just run from the airport to do this part.
Yeah.
He's knackered. He's breathless. Mm. Also horny, so I don't know where that came from, but he's sweaty, he's a mess. And the part doesn't need it.
No.
It's a very small part. His role is to give information so we can continue the rest of the film. Mm. You're making a fucking meal of this, boy.
And then he says, it's great because we got this camera that they installed and we can use the gizmo.
Yeah.
And then he says, no tech like this exists in America. I'm like, what? A camera that can zoom in?
Yeah, a joystick. I mean, we've had them for years, mate.
Yeah.
I had one of them on my Amstrad, you prick.
That's what Connery says. And then Connery says, oh, right, well, can we review the... That's right, because he says it's no technology exists like this in the US. It's recorded onto Laserdisc.
Yeah, which was sort of new then. That's
not that small, though.
No, that's true, yeah.
These are like the size of mini discs without the cases, basically.
Remember the mini CDs used to have?
Yeah.
You used to get them free with magazines. It's that sort of size.
The ones that drop out of your CD player when you put them in.
Yeah, the ones, Stupid.
Yeah, but then Connery's like, oh, that's interesting, and he finds a wrapper for one in the bin. Mm-hmm. That says 12 hours on it. Mm-hmm. And he looks at all the cameras that are recording, and they're all saying 10 plus hours, but one says 2 hours. Mm. So he says, well, where's this one? He goes, I can't tell you anything.
He does really wet noises with his mouth the whole time. He's very... it's horrible. Just fucking tell us so we can go to the next scene.
Please, because this drags on for ages. And then Connery says, well, you stay here, I'm going to go and do some digging. And then Snipes is in there with him and he's like, oh, there's a good party going on tonight. Look at this hot bitch.
I mean, yeah.
I'm going to zoom in on her with the gizmo. And Snipes is like, yeah, that's my wife.
I love that because there's about 500 people at this party and he zooms in on one in the block. You know her? Know her? She's my wife.
And he's like, still. Oh. No. That's my ex-wife. Stop it. Yeah. Still, though. No, stop it.
And even with all that, he still goes, must be nice to fuck a lawyer instead of getting fucked by him.
No, not really.
No.
My ex-wife.
God, what's wrong? What is wrong with you?
Why are you behaving like this?
Hey, you're bad. You're a bad man.
I'm leaving now because you stink. In every possible way. Then when they're leaving the building, because we've got this thing going on here, which I quite enjoy, which is that Wesley Snipes has quite rightly a chip on his shoulder about how white people behave around black people, which I think is fine.
Yeah.
Because white people, as we still see from today in 2021, are still quite horrible to black people.
Yeah.
So you get this nice bit here where we meet Bob Richmond, who Connery knew when he was a trade negotiator for Japan. He's now working for the Nakamoto people. And he shouts at Snipes as he's about to get into his car, "Hey, you." I think he says something racist. And he says,
"Bring the car around."
Bring the car around. He goes, "No, fuck you. Bring your own car around."
He says, wrong guy, wrong fucking century.
That's right. Yeah. Which I really liked.
Yeah.
And then Connery gets in the car and he's like, "Oh, yeah, I knew him from years ago." And they drive off. And you're thinking, "Well, why have we been introduced to that fella?" Oh. So then they go and visit a knocking shop.
Where it's a, what do they call it? A pleasure palace or something like that, where wealthy Japanese men keep their
mistresses.
Mistresses, yeah. And it's Yakuza run.
Yes, because the guy's got a tattoo.
Yeah.
He could work in HMV.
I think there might be a specific one, because I think even in Japan, there is a bias against tattooed people. Like, you know, like some hotels, you're not allowed to stay if you have a tattoo.
Hmm.
What
if you're in the band tattoo?
Well, that's different because, I suppose they are tattooed, but the band tattoo don't look like Yakuza.
No, it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so they go in there and they
go to Cheryl Lynn's room.
It's Cheryl Lynn's room, and she has the place has already been turned over.
Yeah, because there's wet footprints on the floor. And Connery says to him, "What time did it start raining?" And he says, "Oh, about 9. And then we get a close up of a wet footprint on the floor.
Yeah.
And yeah, the place has already been turned over. And while Connery's in the bathroom, he breathes onto the mirror, and we see that two photos are missing.
There are two photos missing. Hmm. There's a photo of her with Eddie Sekimura from the start.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, there's cocaine, I believe.
Yeah.
There's scarves tied to the bed. And there's a plastic bag. So straight away, they make the assumption that this is Steven Tyler's hotel room.
Or David Carradine's been round.
Yeah, David Carradine's been round. Don't open that cupboard. Let's just leave.
Yeah. And that's end of part one of this episode of Smirshpod. We'll be back later in the week with part two, so please stick around. But in the meantime, why not like, subscribe, review, enjoy, share, tell everybody you like. And, you know, why not even buy Thunderbook? Hey, why not? See you next time. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Keza McDonald.
And I'm Ellie Gibson.
And this is our new show, Extra Life.
It's basically us talking to funny people about video games.
When I was a kid, it was Grand Theft Auto.
The Sinclair ZX Spectrum.
We talk about the games people remember from when they were kids and what they're playing now.
Guitar Hero.
The Last of Us 2.
Combat on the Atari 2600.
No, I love Pokemon.
Anyway, find us anywhere you get your podcasts.
Extra Life.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.